Now, problems there are, as there are in every field. Actually, I probably don't have much time to tell you about that. The biggest problem that we have is the fact that people are materialistic, that materialism does get in the way of the gospel. But with prayer and with the witness of the lives of those who have given this up, we feel that there is a wonderful prospect for having a church in New Guinea, which will, in the years to come, be a strong church, which will be a church which will also reach out into other areas. These people are basically quite an intelligent people. When they have the opportunities for education, especially education in the kingdom of God, and when their whole people and their whole culture gets behind it, we will be able to see something, I think, that will make our hearts glad, and we will rejoice because of what God is able to do with these people. We have an opportunity there that is tremendous. In the education program, for example, we could have 14,000 children or so in school once we have the staff. We have the opportunity to take a culture and change it from a heathen one to a Christian one. This is the thing that thrills one about the work in New Guinea, the way that it is growing and progressing, and the way that the Lord has blessed it. I'll leave you with that and ask you all, especially in your prayer, to always include these new Christians and the future development of this work. As you all know, it is not only good that we pray for the heathen, but especially for those who have now only come to the faith, because they need so much our help and our strength. Thank you.
Well, we certainly thank you for that report, because I'm sure that all of us remember when New Guinea was beginning its work, why they talked for about thousands of people coming to their meetings and no result. And I know in my prayers, and I know in the prayers of many of you, that was a great problem. And when the Spirit of God broke through and then hundreds of these people became Christians, all of us rejoiced and thanked God for His Holy Spirit that broke through that realm of paganism. And now the next is Pastor Ernest Hahn. So limit me to 12 minutes. By the way, speaking of Muslim missions, when I think of a missionary's missionary, I think of a Muslim missionary, because I feel they have a difficult job. For someone to work for year after year, to win people, and then maybe get a convert after several years, these are the people that I admire. And I come from a community where we baptize them by the hundreds. But my model missionary is the missionary to the Muslims. And I'm so sorry that we don't have his report. The work in Hong Kong is the work that I am to report on. This work has been a work that's been blessed by God. Pastor Todi has a fine summary of this work. He says, it's not as good as it looks, and it's not as bad as you think. Actually, the Lord has won many, many people in the city of Hong Kong. You know, the communists put to death about 30 million people. The result was that at the rate of 2,000 to 5,000 a day, refugees poured into the British Crown colony of Hong Kong. Yes, that's 20 to 30 million people that the communists admit that they put to death to establish their reign of terror in Hong Kong. Now, the people that poured into Hong Kong were usually business people, people with money, people with prestige, and people with power. And many, many of these people, of course, when they came to Hong Kong, were penniless, hopeless, without God, and without faith in the future. And many, many of these people have told me this: Pastor, if you had come to our village in, say, this place in Canton, we wouldn't have even listened to you, because we had everything. We had our strong Confucian culture. We had money, we had family ties. And for us to become Christians, why, that would mean that we would be pulled out of our Confucian world, and we would be people without a country and without an environment. And so we wouldn't have wanted to listen to you. And that is exactly what God did with thousands of refugees in the city of Hong Kong. They were pulled out of their Confucian culture, a culture that is similar in some ways to that in which the Muslim lives. I remember my own language teacher told me this. He said, when my father died, I couldn't go to his funeral because I am a Christian and he is a pagan. And if I attended this funeral, I would always be offending my relatives. And so I was not able to attend. The result was my family treated me very shabbily for a long, long time. They regarded me as the outsider. Well, God has broken down that wall, and thousands of people in Hong Kong have become members of our church. In fact, in the last 8 years, about 4,500 persons have been baptized in one of our Missouri Synod congregations in Hong Kong. Now, what I think is important among missionaries is this, that comparisons are always odious, that Hong Kong is not New Guinea, and New Guinea is not India, and Ceylon is not India either, that every world is a different world with different problems. And I liked what Pastor Kreiling said the other day. One, you know, scatters the seed and another waters. And the main thing is that we are faithful to this great message which the Lord Jesus has given to us. But I'm supposed to tell you about Hong Kong. The first service in Hong Kong was held, the first regular service, in March 26, 1950. From there, the refugees poured out of from Hong Kong into Formosa, and our work began there with hundreds of baptized members from our Hong Kong congregation going to Formosa. Then they spilled over into Macau, a congregation, by the way, that was started originally by a convict who found Christ in Hong Kong and was later banished to the city of Macau. The work at the present time, then, has about 4,500 baptized members. There are about 18 stations. We have about 7 parochial schools with about 2,000 children attending these schools. We have about 25 evangelistic workers and about 60 parochial school teachers who are under some type of part-time training. The teachers study about 4 hours a week. The evangelistic workers study about 7 hours a week. My own work, I am supposed to report on a bit. I have, in the last 4 years, spent most of my time with one congregation, which is made up of many dialects. It has about 1,400 members, 1,400 baptized members, but the people speak Toisanese, Cantonese, Hunanese, and a few speak English. And so it's a mixed group. And one of the reasons why I have spent so much time as an associate pastor together with a Chinese native pastor in that church was because it was such a mixed group. And if they had only a Hunanese pastor, why, it was always a little bit of a clique problem. And at the suggestion of the Board of Missions, when I return, I am supposed to spend more time in something else. And this congregation now is to be put under a Chinese pastor, and I think that is indicated right now. The rest of my time I spend with schools, teaching teachers in private schools, teaching students and professors in colleges, and that's about it. And then take 1 hour a week in this evangelistic program. We have 7 hours a week, and I teach one of these hours for our evangelistic workers training. Then I'm supposed to answer 3 questions about our progress toward indigenization. At the present time, we have but 2 native pastors and about 25 evangelistic workers. As to self-support, we have only 1 organized congregation, and I believe it pays about 2/3 of its overall budget. I was very happy in their contribution to the work in the Philippines, that at Christmas time, this poor congregation, and the people in Hong Kong are poor, contributed about $90 in our money, and in 1 day's contribution. And I know the people who contribute that, why they earn maybe $25 a month, and I know that meant real sacrificial giving. And I think this relates to indigenization. I feel that if we really make our people conscious of winning their neighbor, you do not have to worry about their taking care of their own needs. In other words, this idea of winning the world for Jesus Christ doesn't deplete your own resources. Rather, it supplies your own resources. About self-government, I think in our own synod there is a little bit of reaction against self-government, because the other Lutheran groups have had quite a bit of trouble because they have organized into congregations and a district a little bit too soon. And I would say that this overreaction must now be broken down, because one of the criticisms and one of the justifiable criticisms that Pastor Koppelman gave of our work in Hong Kong was that there was not enough self-government. There is only one congregation that is completely organized and which manages its own affairs. But as far as the field in general, it is probably run too much by direct missionary supervision. And I think one of the ways out of this is also the training of these 25 men. Now, this is a commercial, but I think we're entitled to these too. The problems of Hong Kong I'm supposed to report on too. The main problem is the problem of the refugee. There are about 2 million refugees that poured into Hong Kong. So the population in the last 8 years jumped from about 750,000 to almost 3 million. In other words, jumped from the size of San Francisco almost to the size of Chicago. So the problems, you can understand, would be unemployment, lack of education facilities, lack of sanitation, poverty, disease, lack of housing. These are the problems in which we live. And the problem also affects the self-support of a congregation. And these are problems, I think, that all of you can well visualize. Then there's the problem of dialects. The main language of China, of course, is Mandarin. That's the dialect that I speak. But in the city of Hong Kong, we have Cantonese and Khoisanese and Hakkanese. These are the three main groups. And actually, they have much difficulty themselves in communication. And so you can understand that we have problems too. In our one congregation, we have doctrine classes in Mandarin, in Cantonese, and in Hakkanese. And in that congregation, we also should have classes in Khoisanese. So dialects also are one of the problems that we have there. Our goal at the present time, I think, should be this. There are 20 million overseas Chinese. These 20 million overseas Chinese live in Formosa, Hong Kong, Siam, the Philippines, Singapore, you mentioned them, the United States, Canada, Mexico, Cuba, 20 million of them. Our job is to make a strong Christian church among these overseas Chinese. And our prayer is that one day God will open the land of the 600 million Chinese in Red China today. And I think that that is an important thing. About 3 weeks ago, I went to Chinatown, New York City, and there we have a nice flourishing congregation, you know. And our goal should be, wherever there are Chinese, to establish fine Chinese Christian congregations who one day will carry out this great dream of the evangelization of China. The great thing is, we must be ready for such an invasion. And I often wonder if God would open the door, say, of Russia. Would we be ready for Russia? I think it would take us about 25 years even to shift gears. And I wonder if the Lord would open a country like China, whether we would be ready. And this is the commercial too. We have asked the board often to send us at least 3 men to work in this training program and really train these 25 evangelistic workers for overseas work, so that this dream might also be implemented with what's needed. I think I have taken my 12 minutes. And now the next report. India, Pastor Stelter, you tell us of your work there.
Whether I'll be able to keep upon the schedule either. We'll try. As far as the early history of India is concerned, the work was begun in 1895 by Nather and Mohn in the what is now known as the Umbur area. And in 1907, work in the Nagercoil area was begun, and in 1911 in the Trivandrum area. That was a different language area. Umbur and Nagercoil are Tamil areas primarily, while Trivandrum is Malayalam area. And I'll be talking primarily about the work in the Malayalam area because that's where I spent most of my time. Just as a one of the things that I checked over while I was preparing my notes, in the work was begun by Huebner and Nau and Zucker in the Trivandrum area. And of the 27 missionaries who since 1911 have been serving in the Trivandrum area, seven are still in the service. 20 have dropped out. Now, as far as my own personal work was concerned, I was in charge of the our teacher's training school in Trivandrum, where we give both the secular and the religious training to our teachers that we use in our schools out there. And during the past 5 years, I taught about 13 periods a week in the training school and to the college students. We have quite a number. We have some 30 or 40 of our Lutheran boys going to the various colleges, attending the various colleges in Trivandrum. And I was also giving them their religious instruction, trying to keep them in touch with the church and keep up their interest in the church. And I'm happy to say that quite a number of them, in fact, about half of those college students, because that's about all we could use, were very faithful in teaching Sunday school, and thus were kept in touch with the church. I'll be coming back to that problem of the educated unemployed maybe a little bit later on. Then, as far as congregational work is, was concerned, I was had the oversight or responsibility for usually about 20 to 25 congregations, sometimes as high as 65 and 70 when somebody was on furlough. For 3 years, I was general treasurer of the our India mission, and finally was able to turn that over to somebody else. And also the past years, I was one of the editors of our Malayalam church paper, The Christian. The last 3 years, of course, a lot of our time went in on the formation of both our district synod and also the general, the India Evangelical Lutheran Church. I was not actually on the committee for the formulation or drawing up of the Trivandrum District Constitution, but the committee met right next to my bungalow within about 200 feet, and they would get twisted up every once in a while and would come and ask me to help out, and finally, in the end, I attended most of the meetings anyhow and tried to help them along as much as I could. And later on, then, after the Trivandrum Synod was organized in October 1956, during 1957 and up until the beginning of this year, I was one of the members of the Constitution Committee for the General Synod, or the India Evangelical Lutheran Church. Now, in our district, the present president of the church is Pastor Vedamanikam. He's a fairly young man, about 35, 38 years old. And I think, considering that it's entirely new and something altogether strange to them, he is doing a very good job. Now, let's get away from the eye and talk about a few other things. Time's going very fast. Evangelism. Our mission field, we do work right, of course, within the various areas in which we have our established work. For instance, in the past 5 years, I was able to start four new congregations or four new preaching places, two of which have become congregations now with baptized and communicant members. One of those has about 42 or 43 communicant members at the present time, another one 18. The other two are, we don't consider them congregations until we have communicant members in the place. But our Malayalam area expansion field is the Wayanad area, very close to where we do our Malayalam Muslim work also. And as far as our local areas are concerned in the Trivandrum area, the work of expansion is going forward primarily among a certain caste known as the Nadar caste. In India, you know, we have the caste system, and besides that, we have the so-called outcast or scheduled class or depressed class groups, and they also are very nicely divided into various groups. The Nadars are very high up in the outcast group, and about 60% of that caste is Christian, and the work among them is wide open. We can go in almost anywhere where there is a group of Hindu Nadars and go right to work and begin preaching, teaching, and also instruction for baptism and confirmation. Then the next largest, or probably the largest group that we work among is the Sampavar group, which is on the lowest level of the outcast group. Most of them are Christian, and so there isn't much opportunity to for them to expand. Right next to them are the Cheramas or Puliyas. Quite a number of them are non-Christian yet, but being of the absolutely depressed or scheduled classes, as they're called out there, government does give them quite a lot of assistance for in the education of their children and book help and so forth. And even though that is supposed to be given without discrimination to all the Sampavars, they like to classify Christian Sampavars as Christians and not as Sampavars, and eliminate them from the roles that receive help. So the financial difficulty is there in reaching those people. Now, the problem of self-support is one that we are faced with very squarely now, with the board here at home having decided to apply a 5% cut to the India budget every year until 20 years, when the church is to be entirely self-supporting. The church will have to wrestle with this problem for a very long time. Income among the people is still very low. Actually, in the first five-year plan, which just ended with the end of the past year, 57, or early this year, the national wealth is supposed to have increased about 18%, according to statistics. But I am not sure just how much the population increased during that time. I think it came very close to the same amount. And now the second five-year plan is underway. I was talking to one of the members of the Central Planning Commission of the India government about 8 months ago, and talking to him, asking him what their targets were and so forth. And he said that during the next five-year plan, they expect to create 10 million new jobs. But, he says, our problem is that during the next 5 years, we also expect the labor force to increase by just 10 million. In other words, after 5 years, they'll be right back where they started from. And that is really one of the big problems out there. The tremendous population increase and the increase in wealth is not getting ahead. I definitely know that as far as our people are concerned, they are off no better and in many respects worse financially or economically than they were 5 years ago. Now, our work, of course, has been going on towards self-government. Ambur formed its synod organization in 1950, I believe it was, and Trivandrum and Nagercoil in 1956. And the Central Synod was organized in January of this year. We are firm, we're convinced that the church will carry on with the formation of the church out there. The missionaries have become just advisors to the India church, and I think that is a very good thing. as Dr. Grum has mentioned and also realized out there, the Indians are quite vociferous in expressing their opinions and their ideas also in our synodical organization, and sometimes some very irresponsible statements are made, but the majority, I really believe, are convinced that it is up to them to carry on the work, and they are willing to go ahead as God leads them in order to carry on the work of the church. Problems, we have any number of them. The workers' salary in relation to the income of our members, the pastor's salaries and also the teacher's salary. And we have this problem of caste and friction and quarreling and bickering between the castes. Right now we have an additional problem in this, that our government in Kerala State is a communist government. So far they have not interfered with our work to any great extent, except of course in their local workings among the cells and so forth, where they do approach our people, and I have no proof of it, but I do feel that some of our good Lutherans are at the same time also good communists. We were very much worried about the education bill that the communist government was going to pass. There were particularly two features that we were much concerned about. One was that the government could take over any school at any time they wanted to, for reasons, of course, but then you can always find reasons if you want to do something. And there was no recourse to the courts. In other words, their decision was final. It was simply plain totalitarian procedure. And the other one was that all of the teachers would have to be selected from the panels which the government would submit to the school. Father Filippos informed me that the bill has not passed. It had to have the okay of the President of India. He asked the Supreme Court of India for an opinion, and they pointed out a number of sections in the education bill which in their opinion were against the Constitution, and so the bill has not passed. And of course, like I mentioned before, we have the problem of the 5% cut, and along with that the problem of carrying on expansion. It's hard to expand with a decreasing budget. Then another problem that I think we have out there, I believe we've made many mistakes in India, and I'm glad that at least some of the other fields are profiting from our mistakes and trying to avoid them. One of our big problems is the growing together of the pastors and the congregations. For so many years, they have looked to the mission or to the foreign group for support and for guidance and for the solution of all their problems. That, well, both as far as our Christian community is concerned and as far as our pastors are concerned, they were looking towards the missionary and the home board too much. Now this change has come about, and they are compelled to look at it from their own side and try to find a solution to their problems. And I believe that that is going to be a very good thing in getting our pastors and congregations to grow and work together. In general, I am very pleased with the attitude of our pastors and also many of our laymen. With the organization of the church out there, they are taking a very good interest in the work. The laymen express themselves quite volubly, particularly in committees. They still don't talk too much in the general groups, but in committees they'll open up and they'll express their ideas. And in spite of communism and in spite of a revival of Hinduism, I do believe that the work in India will steadily go forward. We have our bickerings and our quarrels, and I often think that of one thing. I own quite a few of the old synodal Berichte of the early history of our church and of many of our districts. And I find it very interesting, I've found it very interesting these past 4 or 5 years to browse through, particularly the back pages of those synodal Berichte, where all the squabbles and quarrels that came up before the district conventions are written down. And I found that there is a very strong parallel between the early history of our church and the history of the church here in India, the church in India in these difficulties that they have in the first period. And I am sure that as our church outgrew those difficulties and settled down, so also the church in India will, and so may God bless the India Evangelical Lutheran Church. And my apologies to the chairman for running over.
Well, we certainly assure the Mr. Reverend Stelter that the prayers, our prayers certainly are for this new Indian Synod, that the Lord will give them the wisdom and the strength to grow into our real church. And also our prayers are for you, Pastor Stelter. We know that after many years in India, you now are at a crossroads because of his wife's health. He is contemplating even a call in the States. And we know that the Lord will certainly give you his spirit so that you will make the right decision. Who else is ready to report? Pastor Dorn. Pastor Dorn from the Philippines.
Well, here we go, talking about the best mission of the whole group. Of course, that's where all of you feel, so I'll keep mine down to 12 minutes, too. Our work began in 1946, just about the time the Philippines received its independence from the United States. July 4th, 1946, they received their independence, and I think Reverend Carino arrived within a month of that time. Reverend Carino, whom many of you may already know, was a Filipino who came here to the States when he was young, became a Lutheran pastor, toured the Philippines with Dr. Schmidt back in 1940 or 41, and the war interrupted the plans. After the war, work got started. Carino was first, Mayer followed very quickly. We now have 18 missionaries on our staff, one of whom is a layman, an agricultural worker in the leper colony in Culion. In order to give you a proper understanding what the Philippines is like, you have to remember that since Magellan visited, the Filipinos don't like the word discovered, since Magellan visited the Philippines in 1521, the Spanish influence has been very great. And so is the influence of the Spanish religion, namely Roman Catholicism. The Catholicism there is a type that you'll find in Mexico and Central and South America, rather pagan Catholicism. And the 50-odd years of American influence since Dewey relieved the Spanish of their colony in 1898 has had its effect, but you still see an awful lot of Spanish culture around there and a lot of Spanish religion. The work has been steadily growing. I think we've got a very wonderful mission in the Philippines. It's growing steadily and slowly, and progress toward indigenization is coming along nicely, I'd say. I'm supposed to talk a little bit about my own work, which has been mostly pastoral work. We started out taking care of 2 congregations. After Needing arrived, we only had 1 congregation to take care of. The last 2 years, we've had 2 congregations again, the northern part of Manila and the heart of Manila, the oldest congregation. Congregational life. But then for 1 year, all of the missionaries in Manila were sharing the work of teaching in the seminary. That was our first year of the seminary. We discovered that wasn't so good. We consolidated, and 3 of the missionaries have been teaching in the seminary full-time. And Prang and myself have been taking care of the parish work full time. It works out much more satisfactorily that way. The progress toward indigenization can best be shown by what has happened since I had to take over two congregations again. You know, that's one of our mistakes that we made in the Philippines, especially in Manila, where we tied ourselves down a little bit too much to congregational work and not really the type of work that you would expect a missionary to carry on. The folks at Bethel, I remember, didn't like it too well that I'd have to be shared with another congregation, and the folks at the other congregation didn't like it so well. And that was one of the blessings. They discovered they had to go ahead and work on their own. Before that, people didn't like to go out visiting much unless I was along with them to visit their prospects, these Lutheran Hour contacts and so on. Well, now they realize that I just didn't have the time to visit them. They realized that I couldn't be there to help to direct a Christmas Eve program with the Sunday school. It's remarkable what they can do on their own, and they've discovered it. It's been a great, discovered what they can do on their own. It's been a wonderful lesson for them. And one of the greatest lessons for them was, or one of the greatest marks of progress came when we were leaving on furlough. It's rather humiliating to see that the congregation really springs to life, not so much when you're there, but when you leave. That would probably give you an evaluation of the way self-propagation goes on evangelistically. As far as stewardship is concerned, actually, I wish I had pushed the idea of financial stewardship a little bit more strongly, but I think the people in the congregations that I served also have come a long way. The people all over the Philippines we have been trying to teach them stewardship from the very beginning. The mission program in Mountain Province was laid squarely in their lap from the beginning. Our Filipino missionary to Mountain Province was called not by the Board of Foreign Missions, but by a mission committee of the Philippine churches. And so they felt their own responsibility toward their pagans in Mountain Province. Self-government, this is one of the most thrilling parts of our indigenization, I think. 10 years after our mission got started, in 1956, we had our Filipino delegates from the congregation at our annual conference for the first time. They only had voice the first year, but since then they've had voice and vote. And it's been a wonderful blessing to our work to have them working side by side with us. You know how some of these problems come up where it's a little bit embarrassing or difficult for an Americano to talk to one of the national workers about some little difficulty? Well, those Filipinos can talk Turkey to each other in a beautiful way. That's one of the advantages of having them with us. But, of course, the greatest advantage is just the knowledge that they're beginning to realize more than ever it's their church. They're a part of it. They're taking part in the plans and in the decisions. And, that's the most beautiful part of the work. We talk about problems. Actually, one of the problems there is love of America. America is a step just before heaven. How much time do I have? Okay. America is the next step before you get to heaven as far as they're concerned. And one of those problems will come up when our first Filipino graduates from our seminary come out next March. A lot of the people I know of one person anyway who has openly expressed his doubts that Filipinos can possibly become good pastors when they've just graduated from our seminary. Well, our seminary, I think, is a good seminary. And I think the men that are being graduated are going to stand on an equal level as far as ability is concerned in theology and in pastoral work with any of the missionaries that come out of our seminaries in St. Louis and in Springfield. But it's going to be tough for those first graduates to establish themselves in their work and have the respect that they deserve from their fellow Filipinos. One of the problems that we have, I think, is that we've fallen a little short in the policy that missionaries ought to be teachers of teachers. I hope that gradually we can rectify this error, and I think as we get away from the idea of pastoral work and into missionary work a little bit more, and now especially that we have some graduates just about ready for my seminary. I think things are going to blossom out a little bit more. In short, I'd say that this is a wonderful time to be working in the Philippines. That it's like a fruit that's ripe, ready to be plucked. The people are beginning to see their responsibility in the entire Philippine Lutheran Church. The first graduates coming out. Things are happening fast. And, well, we hope that we've been able to give you a little bit of an idea of the thrilling moments that we're experiencing these years. For example, the fact that when I go back to the Philippines, God willing, I will not go back to those same two congregations, but that they will be supporting completely one of the graduates of our seminary, and we'll be able to go on to branch out into some new work. Want some more? All right.
Well, I think all of us admire the steps toward indigenization, it's a hard word, which they have made in the Philippines, especially this training of their pastors at such an early stage in their development. That's something that I think all of us really are very grateful about.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner Carroll apparently could not be with us, but Commissioner Carlin has had the intent to try to report on Japan.
Pastor Carlin to report on Japan.
To get a list of what I'm supposed to say here before I can start talking. The Japan mission this year is a 10-year-old. And like all 10-year-olds, it's quite typically growing up. It was just 10 years ago this September that Reverend Danker stepped off the plane into a totally new situation, a totally different type of civilization, and a tremendous challenge. Japan is still a tremendous challenge, but it is also still a 10-year-old. I think you all know what I mean when I say a 10-year-old. He's a bit rebellious. But in spite of it all, he's growing and he's learning. In Japan, we are learning. That's one of the biggest jobs we have right now. Most of the missionaries there are young. Just to point that out, I'm the senior missionary. As far as point of time and mission experience is concerned. So we are all learning. And as you know, the learning process sometimes is very difficult. But we feel that God's Spirit is with us and that the learning process is going along very nicely. Of course, when you are being self-taught, there are times when you go astray and when you also find yourself in difficulties. And of course, that is typical of our Japan mission. We are feeling our way. It's very difficult at times to know just which way to go, especially in this new thrust toward indigenization. And another word that's been tossed about a lot in Japan these days is itineration. One of the most difficult things, I think, for us to learn is just plain good old-fashioned discipline. So that we are all very responsible people and carry that responsibility through in our work so that we are also able to make the people there responsible. One of the great parts of growing up and of learning and of becoming an indigenous church is learning responsibility. There's a lot of ways of saying responsibility, but I think you know what I'm referring to. All 10-year-olds are growing people. The Japan mission is also growing in many ways. One of the vitamins that is helping our growth in Japan is, of course, the Lutheran Hour. There are a lot of people that think that we missionaries in Japan are, well, to put it very bluntly, a bunch of liars, because we're simply trying to tell the plain, simple truth of what God has done through the Lutheran Hour in Japan. When Pastor Berchtlad back there wrote that in Japan we have at least 600 or so people who have requested baptism per missionary, many people think that he was coloring the thing and talking through his hat. Of course, you have to understand that that means throughout the island, and we don't have missionaries in all of the islands. But it is true that if we had enough missionaries to spread out far enough to cover all of the territory that we are working, that we are covering with the Lutheran Hour, we have about 10,000, I think, 10,000 to 12,000 people who had actually applied for baptism. And so one of the sadnesses in Japan today is that these people are not being served. We can't possibly get to them. One of the great tasks in Japan is this Lutheran Hour follow-up. We have learned it the hard way ourselves, and now we're trying to teach our people to work that way. Many of the congregations have organized a follow-up program that is a joy to see. They are busy. They are very active and earnest in their work of calling on these Lutheran Hour contacts. In my own group in Niigata, for instance, we even have 4 or 5 who are regularly each week visiting the prisoners of the very large national prison in Niigata City, where above second termers are housed. And these people are responding to the work of the Holy Spirit through the Word and through the witness of these young Christians in Niigata. We have also established an aftercare. You know, that's one of the tremendous things as far as prison work is concerned. While you've got them as a captive audience in the prison, the work goes along quite nicely. But what happens to them after they leave the prison is the greatest part of the work. Unless you can keep up your contact with them, they get back into their own society, which of course isn't the best influence to bring them again to the cross. And so our work has gone into aftercare. I might mention that that is true not only of the prison work, but also of the great hospital work we are doing. Just to mention one example, at present, Pastor Shibata, one of our Japanese pastors, is instructing a class of about 35 people in a sanatorium in Niigata Prefecture. But what happens to those people after they leave the sanatorium and return to their homes is the important part of our work, which we haven't been able to solve completely. And that is where our new idea of Lutheran Hour cells comes in. Before he left Japan, Pastor Danker had this idea and talked about it. The rest of us weren't quite as advanced as he was in this planning and thinking, and thought he was just a little bit touched at that time, but time has proven that he was very forward-looking, and we were grateful to him for some of his ideas. At present, the cell idea is being organized. Some of the groups have already been started in territory where we have no missionaries, Ibaraki and Tochigi prefectures, which are north of Tokyo quite a ways. We have one missionary in charge of the work in that area, but since he is also the Lutheran Hour director, that gives him quite a job. He's also filling in for Caro while Caro is on furlough, which is another big job since it involves school work and also congregational work and evangelistic work. And so much of the cell work in the Lutheran Hour follow-up is going on through our Japanese Christians. And there I don't mean necessarily our seminary boys or our graduates. I mean laymen. We have a number of laymen who work out from Tokyo and go up and visit these people, bring them materials, teach them how to teach Bible classes, pray with them, and help them to grow into Christ. These cells are very young, and so we can't report just exactly how they are. Sometimes we almost feel maybe they're like a preemie, and we'll need a lot of incubator treatment for quite a while. But the thrilling thing is that they are there, and they are actually growing. We're going to try this more and more in our work. I think one of the fortunate things about furlough is that it takes you out of a situation where you have, as Pastor Dorn spoke of it, gotten to be too much of a pastor and left off being a missionary to too great an extent. One of the things I'm looking forward to in my return is to become a true missionary again and not get tied down into the pastoral work as much. Of course, there is a tremendous necessity for pastoral work in these growing congregations. We can't just simply cut them loose and expect them to get along by themselves. But we can train them to do their own work as much as possible, and also we are preparing them for the idea of calling their own pastors. You know, the silly thing in Japan is that we have an understaffed missionary group and an overstaffed native pastorate because we are all too young ourselves and haven't caught up with the Holy Spirit and his work. He's going so far ahead of us that we have been dragging our feet and not getting things set up the way they should be. The Lutheran Hour, of course, made a big splash about 5 or 6 years ago. Since then, it has tapered off, as things usually do, but we are very happy to be able to say that it is not completely flunking out. It is holding its own and being a very steady influence and a very steady leader of our work there. We still have many people writing in each week for our Bible correspondence course. We have demands for more than our present Bible correspondence course, and therefore we have 3 or 4 new courses being developed at the present time, and they should be out sometime this fall, at least the first one. One of the big things that was discussed at our conference this past end of June in our general conference was TV. You see, in Japan we have a nation which is, of course, the most civilized nation of the Far East. It has the highest living standard. It has a greater rate of literacy than even the United States. It has a people who are cultured and who have a deep appreciation of the things that are fine and good and artistic. And therefore, TV in Japan has a great potential. Unfortunately, just as in the States, it is getting off to a rather bad start. But fortunately, the TV people, the people who run the stations, are interested in keeping it away from the doldrums into which it seems the United States brand of television has descended. And they are interested in more cultural and more educational programs, and for that reason they are seeking us out. And so our Japan conference has pressure from both sides. I'm not clear really on the details. Perhaps Pastor Dr. Berterman could fill us in on this. Who is it that is anxious to sponsor TV in Japan? Is it the Lutheran Layman's League, or is it a different group?
The Lutheran Television Production Committee, in cooperation in conjunction with the Board of Pardons.
Happily enough, this is a sort of a turnabout, and they are putting pressure on us to get TV on in Japan, and Of course, after we got over the initial shock, scurried about to find out more details. And the interesting thing was that one of the independent television stations came up with a study of about 30 or 35 mimeographed pages on why we should bring the This Is the Life into Japan. One of the big points is that at present in television, the top 7 programs are all TV films imported from the United States. They bring the films over and then dub it into English, into Japanese. So we have a Japanese-speaking Superman, and we love Lucy in Japanese, and we even hunt with Robin Hood and his Merry Men in Japanese. And so they feel that it would not be any trick at all to have Grandpa Fisher talking Japanese. And that was voted on in our conference, and so now the negotiations are going on. We want to know just how much the group that is putting the pressure on us out here is going to back us up over there. We have a very happy situation in that it seems quite possible that we will get sustaining time for This Is the Life because of the tremendous popularity and reputation that it has in this country. And that is a phenomenal thing. If we can get sustaining time for our program in Japan, it will mean a cost for dubbing it into Japanese and all the production and everything of only $400 a week. And that is cheap when it comes to television. So that is the thing that is being investigated, and television is growing in Japan so that inside of 2 years, our TV program would probably be able to cover almost as great a territory as our Lutheran Hour is at present. So we hope that you will all remember that phase of the work in Japan, Grandpa Fisher bringing Christ to the Japanese in television. Of course, one of the things that is very fine in Japan, in fact, almost too fine for the progress we've made in other areas, is our theological training program. Don't call it a seminary. It's supposed to be more flexible than a seminary. It's a theological training program. We have a very fine program set up there. Dr. Tice has worked very hard and has done a wonderful piece of work in setting up the program there. We need actually more real Japanese-speaking professors at present. We are trying to go easy on getting boys into the seminary because our church is not at the point where it can absorb them so readily, and therefore we're not trying to push a lot of boys into the seminary. We are trying to keep it at a normal rate of growth so that the graduates will be able to be called by the congregation.